overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life. I am overflowing.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
So I invite you to breathe into the silence out of which that beautiful music arose, and to observe the relationship between the silence and the emergence of the music of the soul, knowing that what we are is a soul, an eternal soul with a physical body. And when we evolve into an awareness, when we become conscious that there is an invisible aspect to this physical existence, then we can slip into the music of the universe. The word universe is universe, one song. And so we come to this experience of Mother's Day to step out of the separate self that wails and suffers with its story, and to enter into the one song. We hear the birds outside parroting that. Yes, it's the one song of life, and you are that life. And so I'm radically brought to that simple realization there are two kinds of people. One who believe there are two, and one who doesn't. And when you are someone that doesn't believe that we are separate, that there is one song, one life, one truth, ever revealing itself throughout creation, well, then the containers of separation begin to fall away. The religions of separation begin to fall away. And then you hear Oliver Wendell Holmes, who says the truth is incontrovertible. Or the Greeks who would say the truth awakens within us when we are ready to awaken. And so this Sunday, we are going to explore the idea of becoming conscious. What becomes conscious? Is it the local self? Or is it something that was always conscious? Conscious meaning awake. When we do our revealing service before this celebration service, I witness each individual sharing their conscious realization of something that seems to be flowering in the field of consciousness that we all share. And so when we know that this awakening never ends, it starts off as a gradual awakening, but perhaps there's a sudden awakening. And in that sudden awakening, we realize that we are more than who we thought we were. Being that it's Mother's Day, my favorite Mother's Day story is 1999. I was in Cape Town, South Africa, at the Parliament of the World Religions. And the first speaker from this week-long series of many erudite people, even His Holiness the Dalai Lama was there. But the first speaker was a woman, a black woman from South Africa, and all five of her children had died from AIDS. And she said to all of us that we are all the mother and these are all our children. And in that holy instant, with tears coming down my face, I realized I came all the way there to acknowledge that we are all the mother and that they are all our children. And so I invite you on this Mother's Day to open your heart to a greater context of who we are. Not as somebody separate with their individualized family, and all of that is beautiful, but there's something so much greater that's awakening on this planet at this sacred time. Pachamama is our Mother Earth. And she's finally getting the recognition of her sacredness. And if you do anything to the earth, you are doing it to your own mother. We could not live without her. We are made out of earth and clay. We are the clay people. And yet there is also Pachipapa, which is this divine presence, the lumina dei, this invisible something that permeates all creation. And so we begin to experience ourselves as an androgynous soul with a masculine and a feminine aspect, the divine masculine, the animus, the divine feminine, the anima. And when you put them together, you have the anima mundi, the soul of the world. And the big inspiration for this Sunday's experience on becoming conscious was a simple but profoundly beautiful book called The Anamkara, which John O'Donohue wrote about the soul friend. And what we come into company with other, seeming other, is to experience the Anamkara. Before I marry any couple, I invite the couple to read the book, The Anamkara, because it's about having a relationship at the soul level with your partner. It's not about a man and a woman coming together, but it's about two souls meeting in that field of shared love. And what happens is there's a potentiation of divine love then. And we begin to experience ourselves, yes, as the voice of love. And we see love everywhere revealed around because it's a reflection of our own self. And so on this Sunday, Mother's Day, I invite you to experience the natural emergence of this, what Thich Nhat Hanh would call the conscious human. And this particular Sunday, we're going to explore becoming conscious. What becomes conscious? Mark Nepo, in his poetic way, reflected that in my life, I have gone through so many experiences that have worn down my dreams and my ideas of who I should be, even having cancer twice, stripped me of all the identity that I had so clung to until worn down, everything fell away, and what emerged was consciousness itself. And he said, it's like the ice that is freezing and all of a sudden became a fluidic water. And then the water whispers to the stars and the galaxies, tell me what you know. And so in that metaphor, we enter into a mysterious connection to the universe, to the one song. And we learn to listen consciously to that which isn't being said, to that which comes from the silence out of which the music arises. Knowing that listening is a sacred practice, to listen to that still small voice within, the voice of God, that doesn't get louder, but gets clearer when all the nattering nabobs of negativity cease to dominate our mental faculties. Well, then we enter into nirvana. We touch nirvana. That's the smile of a child. And then we understand, be like a child if you would enter the kingdom of heaven. If you want this consciousness of oneness, go into the innocence. You understand the metaphor, be like the lily of the field. They toil not, neither do they struggle. Yet Solomon in all his opulence wasn't arrayed as one of these. So on this beautiful spring day, could we be like the flower that's opening petal by petal? And then you read a Rumi poem who says, could I learn from the humble flower that knows how to unfold its petals? And I, the human, has no clue how to unfold the petals of my soul other than to surrender to that same presence that assists the flower in opening of its petals. And so we smile to our inner beingness. That we open to Pachamama this Sunday morning on Mother's Day, to this lumina naturae, this light within nature. And we say to this nurturing presence of the Divine Mother, teach me and show me the way, knowing that you are always there, assisting me and holding me up. In my little book, The Gardener, it's written by a Spanish poet, and he tells a story at the end of the book, how the gardener was strolling through his garden, and he was elderly at this stage of his life, and he tripped over a root of a tree that was protruding on the pathway, and he went airborne, and he fell on the earth. And the gardener says to the Mother Earth, thank you, Mother, for always being there. When my feet went into the air, you reached up and held me when I fell into your arms. And so to know that we are always held by this Mother Earth, that we have a bigger sense of our connection to this sacred day, this day of remembrance. It was Thich Nhat Hanh who speaks about continuation and how spirit was never born and spirit never dies. And on Mother's Day, Thich Nhat Hanh would say, for every mother who is no longer here on the planet, I will give you a white rose so that you can know that she is still here, but she's in spirit form. And to those of you who have a physical mother still present, I'll present to you a red rose, knowing that you still have her in form. But know deeply that mother is still with us always. When my mother made her transition in September of 2000, I was at her bedside, and the last words that my mother said were, Mother, and in that sacred moment, I sensed that her mother was there for her. As she took her last breath, and there was a smile on her face, So I invite you to expand your field of awareness on this sacred Sunday morning, to feel the mother in your heart, and to know that she did nothing less than transmit herself to you. And it's not just our physical mother, it's the mothers throughout time that live in us. And if you're ready to open your eyes and look at the face of the mother in front of you, get playful with it. It's not about gender. It's about the soul. And you know, what we are is this, this invisible something that takes form. And in that form, the trap is, one of my ministerial students, I have the strangest ministerial students. I've been a minister for 33 years, and I would always get the call from the strange ones that never fit in. And they would ask me if I would be their spiritual daddy. And I have quite a few of them out there. They were the renegades. They were the ones that were doing their own thing. And I got a phone call, a text from one of my students from 30 years ago. She says, I'm going to be in Alabama. You want to have lunch? She's coming here from Eugene, Oregon. And she was going to be in Montgomery, Alabama at the Lynching Museum. And I says, well, you know, I have classes on Wednesday. I can't really drive over to have the meeting with you. But we talked online, and she said, I said, after all these years of doing your ministry, she said, well, I'm so different now. She says, you know, so many people are goal-oriented. And she was telling me all the books that she's been reading. And so much of the world is a goal. You have a goal, you set it, and you want to achieve it. She says, but the soul doesn't do that. Because, you know, once you achieve the goal, you might as well say it's over. But the soul sets an intention, which is an ongoing unfolding of life. Maybe I'm going to set an intention to be fully present to the nirvana moments that are always there, that I'm going to be holding sacred the one that I'm with. Adam was sharing with me, he could meet a total stranger on the street, not knowing anything about them. And before you know it, they found that Anamkara place, that soul friend. They don't have to have a history of attachment and relationships. Just by the very fact that they can be present in the moment with one another, they have this resonance. And so what if we have this capacity to have a heart to heart with all creation, and that once we let go of our idea of me is separate from you, well, then we meet in a field of I am you. When we get back to normal and we can stand in a circle at the end, you know, my husband only comes briefly and very few people see him. And if you do want to see him, on the rare occasion he shows up at the end of the service and he opens the doors. It's almost like the Loretta Young show. Here I am. You want to see me? I do exist. And he opens the doors. People get in the circle. He takes my hand and then maybe Jody Rutenberg's hand. We sing. He loves to sing the song. I am you. You are me. We are one. And in this unity, we will live in harmony and peace will come because we are one. And once we sing that song and we know that we're all one, he leaves, never to be seen again. And that's his MO. And after almost 50 years of being with this beautiful relationship, I realized so much of what works in life is to let people have the life that they want to have, to explore the way that they want to process the challenges of life. And some people are a little more fragile than others. So could we be gentle and have compassion as our superpower? So when they show us their fragile side, they're really showing us a very powerful part of themselves. This morning, he wanted to go and spread Sister Susan's ashes. You know, he went up to New York City and he found Biff's grave and he put some of the ashes on Biff's grave. He went to the Hudson River, some of the ashes on Hudson River. Her favorite pub on the east side, some of her ashes at the pub on the east side. But he brought back a honey jar filled with her ashes. And so this Sunday morning, we waddled around with the stroller and the one-eyed pug to find a special tree that he'd labeled Susan after her. And so he didn't want to tell the people where the tree was planted in their yard because he gave the city $2,000 to plant trees. And one of the trees was in this yard. And of course, she had to die when the tree was planted. So he called the tree Susan. So this morning, she's a southern red oak. We went to that southern red oak and Susan's ashes are around the southern red oak. And he felt fulfilled. Now, I said, you know, it would be nice as a minister to create a little bit of a ritual around that. He didn't want a ritual. He wanted to, it's a drive-by dropping off of the things and don't tell anybody because this is what you do when you're secretly spreading your sister's ashes in someone else's yard. But now it's public. So if you're on Pratt Avenue, that's where she's resting. So let me, this is This is the book that to me is sacred more than any book. It's called The Anamkara by John O'Donohue. He's this this Irish priest who, like so many, like Richard Rohr, he said, I had to get out of the priesthood. There was too much sin there. And, you know, so once he left the priesthood, then he could really give his ministry. And his ministry is one from the soul. And he talks about how we're all connected. And it's interesting in this series called Emergence, which is what I'm doing this month. Last week, I talked about a flow of light. And his first chapter is all there is this sacred light. Now, remember in the Sufi tradition, they say all is light and all is love. And when we die, we take the light with us and we leave the love behind. So what's beautiful about that is you get to play with these invisible somethings called light. And he says, you know, in Ireland, when the sun rises, it faces the darkness and it brings out the dawn. And if you can open to the light, and there's also a light in the soul that lights up from within. And so you start having a relationship with the light, and Raven meets the light in David. You know, I remember Jody Rutenberg came to the center and, she was working at Blue Cross Blue Shield at the time. And one of my ministerial students, Pam Hurdy, worked at Blue Cross with her. And Pam has this little light that shines. I mean, she always has. And I remember Jody saying, I want what she has, you know. I want that same light. Well, it's just the light of the love, the light of the one. And so this is what John O'Donohue talks about. I've got a recipe for sweet onion salsa. Ooh, that looks good. John O'Donohue says, true listening is worship. And with a sense of deep hearing, we listen to creation. Now, I'm going to end this talk with a prayer by Llewellyn Van Lee about how we can effectively know our interconnectedness with everything and hear the cry of the world. She's crying right now so that the mother in us can embrace her. Now, this isn't a shame thing. This isn't I've got to fix it thing. This is I'm going to be the nurturing presence in whatever shows itself to me, and I'm going to be able to deeply listen. Now, have you noticed that my beloved brother Lee, we have a relationship with ourself in addition to this relationship with other, but ultimately there's only the one relationship that you're having with yourself. Now, that's kind of a daunting idea, because how you have a relationship with you is how you see other. And when you know that I'm not separate from other, well, then I'm always having a relationship with myself. Serena is me. You know, and then, boy, it just becomes so different. Pepper is my daughter that lives in that woman's house. And she's finally realized the one dog rule works. Now, that's because Speckles, you get her with another dog, she will take off and she's bad news. But if you give her a certain restriction, she'll stick around. Well, that's a moment of conscious awakening, becoming conscious. So here's John O'Donohue. Listen, he said, sometimes we listen to things, but we never really hear them. True listening brings us in touch even with that which has been unsaid and is unsayable. You know, sometimes people just want to be held. Words are not necessary. I was at a minister's gathering in Vancouver, British Columbia, and there were maybe 1,000 ministers, and they did a grief process at the beginning because our organization was dying. It was merging with another one. And in that process, which they did, a ritual, they said, if there's any ungrieved grief, let it arise. Well, I had, oh God, a whole lifetime of ungrieved grief. I never grieved. And it was like a volcano coming up from within, and I couldn't stop sobbing. I mean, it was like wailing. And everybody looked at me like, what's wrong with him? And you know, then they went on with the business meeting. They do a grief process, then we'll go on with the business meeting. And there's 1,000 people in a business meeting, and I'm standing at the doorway running because I had to sob. And they said, well, there's a prayer room on the third floor. They always put it on the third floor. So I got in the elevator, went up to the third floor, went down this long hallway, and there's two practitioners sitting in a room. And I went to the door, and they said, can we help you? And I literally fell to my knees and started sobbing. And to the credit of that practitioner, she walked over, got on her knees, and put her arms around me and said, there's nothing I need to say. Because the grief was coming up and it just had to be met. Now, was it logical? No. It was a lifetime of grief. So this is what he's saying. Listen to what isn't being said. True listening brings us in touch with that which is unsayable. And sometimes the most important threshold of the mystery are places of silence. So to be genuinely spiritual is to have a great respect for the possibilities and the presence of this silence. Now, we just had that beautiful music. That music arose within the silence. Could we hear the music of the soul being played? I could. You know, Martin Heidegger says, true listening is worship. when we would do the what they call heart math in our classes over the years, 33 years of classes, we would have people sitting, husband and wife. This is usually what I recommend. You sit opposite your partner and you speak from the heart. And then if Michael were my partner, he would listen and he would mirror back what he heard. And I would share if that's correct. And then Michael would share from the heart and I would sit there, listen. And then I would reflect, this is what I heard you saying. And he would say, is that correct? So you would have this way of listening to sometimes what isn't being said. And this is really to create this flow from heart to heart. True listening is worship. And when you listen with your soul, you come into rhythm with the unity with the music of the universe. Through friendship and love, you learn to attune yourself to this silence, to this threshold of the mystery where your life enters the life of your beloved and the beloved's life enters into yours. Now, this is what they talk about, the Anamkara, the soul friend. We meet in that soul of the universe. We meet in that one song. So it's never been about you as a separate self. It's always been this quantum love that wants to use you to reveal itself to you and to express as you. He does this huge chapter in here. All the soul wants to do is express, whereas the ego wants to impress. Did you like me? Did you really like me? No. The soul just needs to express whether they like you or not. It doesn't matter to the soul. So he's going on to this whole thing. Through friendship and love, you learn to attune yourself to the silence, to the threshold of the mystery, and you enter into your life and the beloved enters into you. So when you speak from that deep inner voice, hopefully that's what I do sometimes, that you are really speaking from the unique tabernacle of the one presence, to let that one presence find its way through you. That's why when I go home on Sundays, I often have to listen to, because I don't know what the presence is going to say through me, other than it wants to use this vehicle to say that we are more than we think we are. We are the context, and we identify with the content. Now, the context is the spacious field out of which everything arises. You might say it's the sky or the ocean, and we tend to want to identify as the wave or the cloud. And it's saying, no, 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 no. You are that bigger something. We are all the Divine Mother. Yeah, you've got two beautiful boys, but it's so much more. How about all those children? My husband was a school teacher for over 30 years, and I watched how he wasn't there teaching computers. He was there loving those students, validating them for who they are, calling forth their beauty. And it was a calling of his soul, just like with Judy Graff. It was an avocation. Now, he thought he wanted it because he'd have the summers off, which he liked to travel. But truly, it's because he loved children. Then he tried to shove me into the arena as a school teacher. And I said, this job will kill me. I had to leave that. And I ended up with you guys. So what the heck? When you speak from the deep inner voice, you're really speaking from a unique tabernacle of the one presence. And there is a voice within you that no one, not even you, has ever heard. Adam is hearing this voice within him. It's the voice of his intuition. And he said, it's always right. It's not Adam. So what's becoming conscious? You could say it's the Buddha nature. It's the awakened one that we all share. Remember, it was Emerson, and you get little hints along the way. Catch the hint. Emerson said, it is only your finite self that wails and suffers. That's the me person. But at the same time, this infinite presence lies stretched in smiling repose. That's the nirvana place. Now, could we identify with that smile of this divine presence that's always been there? You can see it in a butterfly better than you can see it in a human. And if you see it out there, it's because it's awakening in here. Now, are we called to this? Yes, we're called to first find it here and then see it out there. It's the same presence. There is a voice within you that no one, not even you, has ever heard. So give yourself this opportunity of silence. That's why we meditate, Terry Boy. Give yourself this idea of silence and begin to develop your listening in order so that you can hear deep within yourself the music of your own spirit. Now, I love the fact that you're doing this music this Sunday. And this morning when I was reading this at 5 in the morning, he kept talking about the music. It's the music of the soul. Now, yes, you used a guitar, but it was still the music of the soul. These are two extremely soulful men. And when I said, are you going to sing the song? They said, oh, there's no singing. Because in a way, words would get in the way. There's just this music of the universe. So, wow. So he goes on to say this. The wonderful conductor, Sergei Kalabachi, said, we do not create the music. We only create the conditions so that she can appear through us. My beloved Emily is an instrument for the divine, and she sang the national anthem at the game this week on Tuesday night, was it? And they were cheering, And in a way, it was a sacred appointment with her to give a message, oh, say, can you see? Maybe, oh, say, can you feel? Again, by the dawn's early light, that we're in a troubled time right now, but this music is calling us to come together in a conscious, open-hearted space where we're called to serve something bigger than ourselves. You know, I actually love America, and I love that it's founded on principles of equality, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We can't go backward into some kind of authoritative dictatorship. We have to be the voice of those that can have a church like this in Alabama. I remember when I first started this work, Ben Stevens, who rented us out the place, he said, he was Baptist, he said, you should be glad that they're not burning a cross on your front steps out here. I said, I didn't know that they did that down here in Alabama. And he says, well, you should just be glad they didn't do it to you. And I said, well, had I known, I might not have come here, but you never know the conditions. We do not create this music. We only create the conditions so that this music can appear. So music ministers to the silence and to the solitude of nature. There's an Irish writer named Sean O'Fallon who said, in the presence of great music, we have no alternative but to live nobly. In the presence of great music, we have no other alternative but to live nobly. So then try that one on for your soul. How would your soul resonate to great music? It's funny, when Humphrey had his herniated disc, and it was on a Sunday morning, I remember handing him to Bob. Bob was holding him in his arms, and he was lifeless. And you know, the show's got to go on, and I didn't know what to do with him at that stage. So Jody scooped him up and took him to the emergency room. And 3 days later, they did a thing, MRI or something, and then they did surgery on his neck, and he had to learn to walk again. And so for 7 days, with Trey gone on one of his trips, I'm lying on the floor with a paralyzed pug, and I realized I was a bit of a mess. So I put on music. I put on light classical music. And to this day, when I put on that light classical music, the pug goes to his bed and he curls up because he realizes the music was taking him into a place of silence. You know, and I wasn't going to be any good sitting there wailing and moaning about him. I just lay in the silence next to him. He knew that the love was there. The Divine Mother was holding him in her arms, and he was snorting, and he could still snort. He couldn't eat. He couldn't lift his head, but he would eat if I put a little dropper. And then someone said, give him some CBD oil. And I said, I'm desperate. Bring it on over. So he was getting the CBD oil, thinking that might help him with his. And you know, he can walk today, and he's humble, and he's noble, and he's here. And what a gift he gave me. So this becoming conscious is something that happens in those little moments. I was thinking, what is a becoming conscious moment? Now, ask yourself this. This is the lesson in this emergence. We are light beings, and this light is becoming conscious. So what's really important is where is it becoming conscious in you? 30 years ago, I'm a new minister. And you know, I saw a poster that says you must always be the lead dog. If you're not, you're always going to be looking up some other dogs, you know what. And that was kind of a shock because I'm a brand new minister. Always be a lead dog. And at that particular time, there was a therapist at the center. And, you know, therapists have this ability to label everybody with some kind of malady. And so she proceeded. She was a dear friend of mine. And she would say, this one's got this, and this one's got that, and this one's got... And every one of you pretty much was labeled as some kind of sick thing in her definition. And one in particular, there was a little old man here named Charlie Johnson. He used to flirt with the ladies, and he would say inappropriate things. And I'd say, Charlie, don't hit on the church ladies. But he didn't have it. He couldn't do it because he was old Southern Alabama. Susan knows what I'm talking about. You're a mighty fine looking woman, Susan. And before you know it, she'd say, David, you got to. I said, you know what? This is just what he does. And so this therapist told me that I wasn't angry enough. As a minister, I need to be more angry, put my foot down. Yes. And get rid of people like him. Because she says, they're a threat to the women in the center. And I said, you know, I don't operate that. I don't threaten people to leave because you don't fit my criteria of what a... And so she used to say, well, you don't understand anger. There's a thing called holy anger because it motivates you. T understands holy anger. It motivates you for change. And I just said, well, you know, my father was a rageaholic. And when he would get angry, I would withdraw. I was one of those kids that withdraw to the basement because I couldn't handle anger. And so it was a Saturday afternoon. I'm working on the sermon and she calls me. And she sent a letter to all the board members saying that I'm unfit to be the minister because I'm not using the hard line on Charlie Johnson. And she thinks that he should be thrown out of the church. And as she's talking to me, in preparing for the sermon, I'd been reading Parabola magazine. And there was a beautiful metaphorical story of Jesus. and how Jesus was teaching his apostles, and he was tired from preaching, and he says, you know, I need to take a nap. So he got on the boat on the Sea of Galilee, and he said to them, whatever you do, don't wake me up, because I'm really tired. But then it said in the story, and a storm brewed on the sea, and the apostles grew afraid, and they shook the master. And they said, there's a storm out here. And Jesus said in that moment, you took the storm on the outside, and you put it on the inside. And as I was talking to the lady on the phone, I realized, I said, I'm feeling this holy anger. I said, you've taken this storm at the center on the outside and you placed it on the inside, and I was actually feeling the sacred rage. And I said, no, thank you. I will run the center the way I do. I'm not throwing anybody out. If he offends you, well, maybe then you need to leave. And so in that moment, I became conscious that I had to find my voice. And what if that's the gift in all of this? It's not necessarily going to be easy when that voice wakes up, you know? And so now whenever I see, and this is relevant to this time, we've got Ukraine. It's important that we don't take that war that's over there and put it on the inside and make it a war within us. We need to send our well wishes and our conscious awareness of the emerging transformation that's taking place. That's the only thing we can ever do when we're in troubled times in our country. And haven't we always been in troubled times in this country? I mean, if you're a student of history, you can observe it. You know, as a gay man, there was a time when I had to hide in the closet for many, 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 many years because I was afraid to be seen. Now I can openly say I'm married to my husband almost for 50 years. Now there may come a time in the not too distant future when I won't be able to say that, when I'll have to withdraw and pretend again. But you know, it's too hard to pretend once you've had your freedom, once you've been liberated from slavery, if you will, to go back and to be a slave of an idea. And look at this spiritual teaching of ours. I think it's so amazing. Adam in this beautiful feng shui thing at the center, and I love what he did. But he put a picture. It kind of reminds me of New York City when I lived there. They would have these Mexican places where they would have a Jesus that was in, where he had a three-dimensional Jesus, and he'd be going like this. And you'd walk by these, and there would be Jesus going like this. Well, Adam put one in there, the Virgin Mary having the baby with the angels behind her. And if you look around, you can see that Mary's got some rhythm to her, and the angels are around her. And it's really quite a beautiful effigy in the bookstore. I think it's rather interesting that Adam would put it there. And so as I'm looking at it this morning, I said, you know, really what that's pointing toward is the birth of the divine self within all of us. It was never about baby Jesus and Mary the Virgin and Joseph the carpenter. No, it was always about through this innocent, pure part of ourselves, we give birth to the Christ presence. That's what that metaphor was all about.
Well, then it's all different, isn't it? Yeah, well, Bert, you understood it, but these humans, they can't understand it because they want to take it literally. And you know what? You can't take that stuff literally. It's a metaphor. Adam and Eve weren't the first two. We had the prehistoric people down there along the way with the Cro-Magnon man in the, you know, the clubs and all that sort of stuff. We had the dinosaurs, you know, we can't pretend they didn't exist.
I remember once, Trey and I went to that cave that they have here. What's the name of that big cave? The big one. Near Scottsboro, famous Cathedral Caverns. And we went there when we first moved here, and they had a Baptist church group touring. And now they said the Cathedral Canyons are 2 million years old. And I said, well, isn't that interesting, Trey? I said, because Adam and Eve were like 6,000 years ago. Well, now that doesn't compute. And then the Baptist church lady looked at me, and I thought, he says, David, do you always have to do this? I said, I guess I do. I just have a way of saying that the truth defies. Yeah, so my teacher Kennedy used to say, you're not here to comfort the afflicted, you're here to afflict the comfortable. You're here to say what it isn't. And so when we know that this divine something is giving birth in us, could we say yes to that? And could we invite that? I'm going to invite Raul and Bob to come up and play this beautiful piece of music now that we understand about listening to the silence. And from that, I'm going to close with a prayer that I wanted to do on Earth Day, but I'm doing it on Mother's Day. It's at the end of this book, Spiritual Ecology, where Llewellyn von Lee takes us into a prayer of oneness. And in this, I'm going to invite you to open your heart and to offer whatever it is in you as a fashioning factor to change the world. This is how we change the world, through prayer. And prayer is a conscious act of entering into a field and then letting that reveal itself. So Gigi, if you want to ring the bell one last time. There she is. You can ring the bell, Gigi. Happy Mother's Day, by the way. So we need to relearn the wisdom of listening to life, feeling its heartbeat, sensing its soul. But first, there is a pressing need to reconnect matter and spirit. All of life is sacred. Every breath and every stone. This is one of the great secrets of oneness. Everything is included. So within our heart and soul, we can reconnect with our primal knowing that the divine is present in everything. Rest as that awareness. The divine is present in everything. And so there is a simple prayer. A simple prayer for our earth. And that is the act of placing the world as a living being within your heart. When we inwardly remember the divine. It's all about remembering. We become aware in our heart the sorrows and the suffering of this planet. And we ask divine love with its healing flow to assist where needed. And through this prayer, the power of the divine will help us and will help the world. It will help bring our earth back into balance. So feel into that, holding the suffering of the planet in your heart in a nurturing way. We need to reawaken the power of love in the world, and it must come through each one of us. He concludes by saying, when we hear the morning chorus of birds, we may sense their deeper joy for life, and in that awaken to our own divine nature. And at night, perhaps, when we see the stars in the heavens, they can remind us of what is infinite and eternal within us and also within the world. And watching the simple wonder of a dawn or a sunset can be an offering in itself. Whatever way we are drawn into this wonder is the way we recognize the sacred. And what matters is always the attitude that we bring. The attitude of gratitude, the attitude of curiosity and fascination, the attitude of, yes, I am here for you. What matters always is the attitude that we bring to this intimate exchange. Could we let it be intimate? And it is through the heart that all real connections are made. And then this connection can come alive within us as a living stream that flows from heart to heart as it embraces all of life. And every step, every touch will be a prayer for Mother Earth and a remembrance of what is sacred. Every step, every breath, every touch is a recognition that it's all sacred. So I invite you to consciously breathe into your body. Observe your mental body and smile to it. It thinks so much. It gets so exhausted with thoughts. And for this brief period of time, we're just telling it to take a rest. Now we enter and become aware of our emotional body. And we know it's had some trauma, some issues. But as the Divine Mother within, the compassionate one, we embrace that part of ourself that maybe had a moment of grief or sadness or anger and know that it was all sacred. And then we pay attention to the physical world that's all around us and the physical experience that we're having. And we smile to that as well as we nurture. I was talking to Jean Ann this morning about rescuing the seedlings from the squirrels as they get into the planters and throw the impatience out into the world. And how an act of rescue is oftentimes playfully necessary in this experience that we're having together. And so we smile to this life that we've been given, knowing that this life will give us every challenge that we need for the emergence of divine love. It may be the one dog rule saves the day, and we realize that we're becoming conscious of a greater order of shared experience on planet Earth. It's a conscious awareness that is not given freely, but that needs to be cultivated with intention. And so as we set our intention to grow and evolve, to shed what no longer serves, in order to midwife what longs to be born within our body of experience, we realize that we're embracing death as a form of birth, and we are part of the evolution on the planet that we so dearly love. Could we offer ourselves in service to this evolution by allowing ourselves to unfold petal by petal like the rose, knowing that we can't force the petals to open faster than they are, but one breath at a time, this something that is becoming conscious also smiles within our heart. So I want you to feel that smile of the beloved within you, that peace that passes all understanding, that's always there, that little place of nirvana, the stillness. The Bible does say, be still, and in that, know that I am God. So to this profound, deafening silence, we say, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
Out of your deafening silence comes the music of life. Let me be an instrument for your beauty.
Let me express from the deep well of knowing.
Let me trust in the unfolding of this incredible life. May I be grateful for all the growth experiences. And may we celebrate together the unfolding of your life. In that realization, I invite you to open your eyes to see the one life everywhere revealed. It's all you, it's all God, it's all good, it's all here for us. From the humblest butterfly to the most glorious elephant. This morning on my calendar in the bathroom, there was a humpback whale, a huge old gal, and on top of her, with her one eye looking up, was a tiny little humpback whale looking down at its mother. And I said, Happy Mother's Day, if you can see it. We are all the mother, and they're all our children. So happy Mother's Day. I love you all. New class Wednesday morning, satsang Wednesday night.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. More information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.